Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the captivating Craig, the daring Dungeon Master's Block, and the generous GM Gerrymander. Today, we have myself, Ange, along with Jared and JT, and we are going to talk about RPGs for the spooky season. Since we're in October, let's get into the creepy, the spooky, and the horror we can bring to our games. Before we dive into that main topic, though, let's ask our Get to Know Gnome question. And since we're talking about Halloween this episode, what's another season or holiday you like theming games around? JT, I'm going to go with you first.
All right. I love the spring equinox. The sense of renewal, being brought back into the world, there's celebration and happiness and joy and cheer and all that. However, I can't let my PCs enjoy it too long because there's always, you know, they're in the middle of some spring celebration and, you know, the leaves are coming back and the world is turning green and the weather is getting better. The days are getting longer. But there's this violin PC plot that's about to just hammer down on whatever celebration they're in the midst of. I've interrupted so many weddings and spring festivals and flower competitions and yeah, I mean, you name it. I've come up with a million different celebratory spring things and then screwed it all up because some evil NPC decided he didn't like it.
What about you, Jared?
So I'm going to slightly cheat and say I actually like using holidays from inside the settings. And one of them that I latched onto was after Star Wars Rebels established that Empire Day was the day that everybody was supposed to stop and celebrate the Republic becoming the Empire, I started working that into my Star Wars games because that just seemed like a great time to have rebels like sneaking around while there's fireworks and parades and everything else going off.
Nice.
That is awesome. I can see that being fun in a Star Wars game.
What about you, Ange?
I've only done this one as a player, but we had a GM run us a game that was holiday themed, and I don't remember if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas, but it was essentially all of the player characters were random strangers stuck in an airport during a snowstorm trying to get home for the holidays. And of course, there's something monstrous happening that they all have to deal with. That was a ton of fun. For me personally, I tend to really enjoy festivals. Whatever reason the place is having some sort of festival. I have a Vaisen game that's themed around a harvest festival. I've run other games that are like county fairs in the middle of summer and that type of thing. There's just something fun about throwing your players into some sort of festive occasion where there's all sorts of stuff going on, but they have some sort of other thing they need to address and deal with. So moving on into our main topic of a discussion, it is time to get spooky. Creepy, spooky horror tends to be a regular thing in RPGs, but we like to talk about it a little more when we get into October and inch closer to Halloween. One of the things we wanted to talk about is how varied it can be to bring in the feeling of the season into your games. So let's start off with what are some of our experiences with horror and spooky games. Jared, I'll start with you.
I wrote down a list, but it reminded me that I absolutely had to bring up the game that Kevin ran of Monster Hearts at GameholeCon, because that was such an amazing game. And Monster Hearts isn't necessarily horror, even though you're playing, you know, supernatural teenagers with messy lives. But that one was themed after like a 70s slasher movie where everyone was at camp. It was glorious. He did an amazing job. I love that scenario dearly. It was just great. And also that year, GameholeCon was like on Halloween, so it was perfect.
I think that's one of the things I think we're going to cover a little bit here. It's like you say Monster Hearts isn't really a horror game, but it plays with tropes that are related to those themes. So I think it's okay to talk about in this context, as long as we understand it's not, and it's not a horror game. And a lot of that, there are a lot of games out there that play with some of these themes, but aren't necessarily what we would traditionally call a horror game. But we'll get into that. JT, what about you?
So I've got two different sides, player and game master. For me, the best spooky game that I was in was actually a briefly lived campaign that Jim ran. Man, I miss you, Jim. I hope you're doing good out there in the world, wherever you are. You were a great game master. But this was second edition AD&D and the Ravenloft Black box set and the accompanying material that came after it. And he just managed to capture the essence of the behind the veil horror. So it wasn't like, you know, in your face. It wasn't the gross body horror. It wasn't, you know, the jump scares or anything. He ran Ravenloft as subtle and pervasive and just, it's there, but you can't see it, but you can feel it. And that set a very high bar for horror or spooky games for me. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do any environmental effects. So we didn't dim the lights and turn, you know, light up candles and shroud the room in black or anything. It was literally just your typical game table in the kitchen nook, you know, with bright lights on. And we played at night because that was our schedule. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, bright outside. But Jim just captured the essence of spook. Very well.
And as a GM?
Oh, as a GM, sure. So for about a year or so, maybe a hair more than that, I ran Vampire Dark Ages, which obviously is the medieval Dark Ages setting for Vampire the Masquerade, just set a few hundred years ago instead of modern time. I managed to take the players who are playing vampires and make them scared of the other things living at night or that were awake at night. And there were tons of supplements for Dark Ages, Vampire Dark Ages, and I had them all at one point. I'm probably never returning to the game because it is super dark. It is one of the darker role-playing games out there, and I'm not going to delve that deep into darkness in my role-playing again. Maybe a one-shot or something like that, right? But as far as the campaign goes, nah. But we had a great time with it, and the players were super invested in everything that we did. I remember one player started crying, and in a good way, right? It was in character crying, but she was so into it, she actually started crying, and it was in reaction to something that a child they met had said and done. But yeah, it was really good. And after that particular scene, I was like, okay, Christy, do you need to take a break? And she took a deep breath and kind of looked off in the distance for about 10 seconds, and then was like, nope, I'm good. Let's move on to the next scene. She just had to reset for a little bit. But yeah, we had so much fun with Vampire Dark Ages.
That's cool. My experiences are, you know, back in the 90s, I did play a lot of World of Darkness. Not a lot. I played enough World of Darkness. And those games do tend to play a lot with those tropes, even if they're not always intended to be horror games. I have, as a GM, run quite a bit of Monster of the Week, which is basically, it's what it says in the name. It's Monster of the Week. It's your X-Files. It's your Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's supernatural. It's, you have a bunch of characters who are out there fighting the things in the darkness to keep the suburbs safe and ignorant. I think that is probably where my preferences lie in these genres, because I have said on numerous occasions, I don't actually enjoy like Call of Cthulhu or the games that are truly advertised as horror. But I think that does bring us into our next question, which is, what are your personal preferences with these kinds of games?
In what context? Are we talking about one shots? Are we talking about long-term situations?
Why don't we cover both?
For one-shots, you mentioned Monster of the Week. I have run that a ton of times. I've run it at a bunch of conventions. I've run it, you know, in, you know, various seasons for my regular players. I've run it and run it and run it, and I love it. And that's a great one for one-shots because it's usually pretty easy to get people to understand the archetypes and jump straight into them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and that's one of those cases where when you are doing a one-shot, though, you really should say, the wronged is Dean Winchester. Don't even, you know, let them try and infer it. Just say that's what this character is. You know, you don't have to say that's who it is, but that's pretty much who this is based on. I think probably the king of spooky games for one shots would be Dread.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as you got a Jenga tower around, it's a pretty simple way, and it does create tension in a way that most games that rely on dice or cards or whatever are not going to create. And it's definitely not a long-term game that you're going to be playing with Dread.
Instead of specific systems, what about your tastes in the themes and style of game? Because let's face it, there is a wide variety of types of games that could fit in this spooky Halloween theme, all the way from, you know, your Monster Hearts, you know, teenage monsters falling in love game to Aliens RPG, where everyone is on a spaceship and dying because the xenomorph is there. There's a vast spectrum of game here that can fit these tropes. So what's the style of game that you tend to enjoy?
Personally, I like watching horror, and Dracula and Frankenstein are two of my favorite novels, but it is very hard for me to say I am going to run a horror game. And by that, I mean, you are people that are just trying to survive. You need to be on the edge of your seat constantly. You don't know if half the party is going to live or not. I can't do that as a GM. I can present a situation that pulls on a lot of those tropes, though, and not necessarily being heavy-handed and saying, nope, you're going to die automatically, but knowing what the tropes are of something like a Friday the 13th when you are at the camp and, you know, the car will not start and there's no way to leave the camp and, you know, things of that nature. But on the other hand, I'm not going to reinforce that, no, you can't run away from Jason. He's going to kill you now. That's kind of my thought there. But I have always been drawn a little bit more towards, like you're saying, Monster of the Week, because I love the idea that there are these horror monsters out there. But if you understand how they work and their weaknesses and everything, that you can fight back against them. It's just going to take effort to do so. And that's actually my favorite thing to dial in with this style of game.
JT, what about you?
So for me, horror is less of a genre and more of an applied feeling and theme. And I shifted my thinking because I heard in a podcast interview, it was either on the Functional Nerds or SF Signal, and I can't find it anymore. I when we came up with this topic, I went searching for it. So I'm pretty sure it was on SF Signal because that site's now defunct. They shut down years and years and years ago. But there was a guy who that Patrick Hester was interviewing literally has a PhD in horror, written literature, movies, music. That's what he dedicated his educational career to, was studying horror. And he argued that it wasn't a genre, but a theme and tone that you can layer on top of any other quote-unquote genre. He actually didn't like the word genre, but he understood the necessity of it. But he really argued that horror is not a genre unto itself, but a tone and theme. So let's take The Shining by Stephen King, classic movie and novel. That is actually a thriller because we know who the bad guy is and we know who the good guy is, and it's how is the good guy going to either get away from and or defeat the bad guy. Of course, the good guy in this case was the little boy. He argued that's not a horror book, but a thriller with horrific themes slathered on top in very thick layers. That's kind of the angle I try to take. I don't sit down and say, okay, I'm going to run a horror game. I try to say, okay, for Halloween, I'm going to have a session of my ongoing fantasy game that is going to be darker and a little more horrific than normal.
For me, it tends to be, I don't enjoy hopeless horror. And there are a lot of games that are presented as horror games that lean into that hopeless horror thing. Cthulhu. A lot of Cthulhu games are like, don't go in expecting your character to survive. And I'm like, I don't want to play my character losing their mind because they've faced some unimaginable horror. Sure, that's some people's jam. That's totally fair. I get it. It's just not something I enjoy. I play games to be the big damn hero. And as a result, I like the type of games like Jared was saying with Monster of the Week. There's a reason I run a lot of Monster of the Week, because it is these characters stepping up to face down the things that are trying to hurt people and hurt the world and cause darkness and despair. And they're stepping up to protect the rest of the world. Maybe they can't stand anybody else, right? But they still know I have the tools to face down these things. And so they step up, and that's the job they do. It's one of the reasons I also enjoy Vaesen, because Vaesen is, it's a mistake to call the game a story of monster hunters. It is more, these are supernatural mysteries that the characters can solve. And sometimes the things you are facing in these mysteries are horrific supernatural things that don't play on the same level, you know, as the rest of society or the world. So I really enjoy the tone and the themes of spooky stuff, but it's more in the, this is a challenge for the players and not something I go into expecting it to be the doom of the players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was something that's interesting that both of you mentioned when you're talking about Vampyre. And that is that, you know, you're playing these characters, but one of the things that's always kind of hit me is part of the horror of Vampyre, at least to me, if it hits the right way, is not being as afraid of the other monsters out there, but being afraid of what you're becoming, like realizing what you're capable of. And in that case, there has to be a lot of showing somebody what normal people are like, this is not normal. What you do is not normal. This is normal. And letting that kind of sink in for people that are willing to internalize that.
I think with Vampyre and most of the other World of Darkness games, that's the thing they were going for, is the player character facing their own monstrosity and trying to, you know, handle that or defeat that. But that's not necessarily the way all the people played it, because I know way too many, and this is no offense to those people, way too many people who loved playing the absolute monsters and completely embracing that dark side and just leaning into it. This goes back to Thacka with Advantage episode Jared and I recorded recently about evil characters. But if you dig into the core of those games, the real horror should be facing the monstrosity within yourself and trying to keep it at bay. Let's talk about some good systems that we think work great for one-shots. We kind of started on this, because let's take a moment and go back to Dread, because Dread is a fantastic game for a horror-themed one-shot.
Yeah, it is so hard to reinforce horror in somebody. It's something somebody has to buy into. And it's also, if you as the GM are not great at knowing, not just knowing the tropes, but knowing what words are going to set off the people at your table, but also set them off in a way that they like and not a way that they're just shutting down, that's a lot of stuff to go on. Except in Dread, you have a Jenga tower and you are creating tension every time you do something important. Because every time you take an action that is significant, you have to pull a block from the Jenga tower. So anytime you do something, it potentially causes something horrible to happen because the tower falls, you're dead, something terrible happened. You know, that's the big boom of the situation. And I love that.
JT, have you ever had a chance to play Dread?
I have not. I've heard a lot about it. I actually met the guy that developed it, that originally wrote it. He was at MileHighCon a million years ago when I was there and bumped into him. So we talked about it, but I've never brought it to the table. And unfortunately, my current game group, it won't work, because one of my fellow gamers in my home group has a neurological palsy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing lethal, but it just gives him shaky fingers. Mm-hmm. So it would be unfair.
Yeah,
right. It's just not a game we can play while he's at the table. If he were to be out some night, then yeah, we probably could play it. But yeah, not with him there.
That is something I know folks who do not enjoy Dread because they don't have the manual dexterity for them to feel comfortable enough making the pulls on the tower.
Yeah.
But for those folks who can do that, it really does reinforce the tension, especially the mounting tension as the game progresses and you watch that tower get shakier and shakier and the pulls become more and more important. And it's funny to watch this game played at conventions, because the way your character is created is you fill out a questionnaire. So you have a bunch of leading questions for your character that you answer, that kind of fill, you know, let you know who this person is you're playing in whatever scenario this is. And everyone's at the table filling out their characters, very thoughtfully putting them together. And then the game starts, that first pull happens, and you will watch as people's chairs move further and further away from the table, to the point by the end of the game, there's probably at least 2 or 3 feet between each player and the table that Jenga tower sits on. And everyone is just leaning forward, totally invested in what's going to happen next.
That does make me wonder now, though, if there is another game that is less reliant on manual dexterity, but also is you take a thing out and then one of them will trigger everything to fall apart, that you could use.
There is actually, well, there's one similar. It's not a Jenga or dexterity based thing. It's called 10 Candles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to bring up 10 Candles.
And you literally light 10 candles, and when something bad happens, you extinguish a candle. It's a storytelling game. So from memory, there were no like dice, character sheets, yada, yada, yada. You don't need good visuals to play the game because it's a storytelling game. And as the candles get doused, the room gets darker and darker and darker, which reinforces that feeling of doom.
Yeah. I believe you make character notes on note cards.
Yeah.
And there is intended to be, like, as the game progresses, you choose to sacrifice parts of yourself to progress the story. And at that point, you usually have a bowl or something on the table, which you basically, you know, light the card and let it burn to ash in the bowl. And you do sit in the dark to play it. So I suppose somebody who has some visual issues might have some problems here, but for the most part, it is something that does allow you to lean into that spooky feeling without having to have the same level of manual dexterity that Dreadwood. I have never played 10 Candles. I will probably never play 10 Candles because, again, that leads into that hopeless horror
yeah,
aspect.
Sure. There's no... Yeah,
there's
at
no
least
getting
in Dread.
Yeah.
Dread, you could still have your final girl type situation where somebody survives. That's not going to happen in 10 Candles.
Most of the Dread games I played or ran were not total party kills. They weren't intended to be. They were intended to be dangerous, but not necessarily fully lethal. I mean, they can be played that way.
There is a PBTA game that I backed, and I cannot remember the name of it, so I'm a terrible person. It's the same people that did the Escape from Dino Island PBTA game. And it is basically a slasher film one. And it is meant to be a one shot. Like, you're probably going to die in this, but it's not quite the, because it's playing up the tropes. It's not quite the like, oh, we're all doomed. It's a depressing thing. It's more of a, haha, yes, this is how he would have died. You know, that sort of situation.
Isn't there a game actually called Final Girl?
There is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different
game
one.
Or
there
card
is.
Game. It's not a role playing game.
Okay.
No, there is a role playing game that uses cards as its resolution called Final Girl, but I have not looked at it enough to say anything other than that.
Okay, because my local game store has it and like a million expansions. I'm assuming it was a Kickstarter thing because of the
that might be
the
a
amount
different
of product.
One than...
Okay,
it is
but
very
it's not
possible.
Filed with the role playing. It's not in the role playing section. It's in the horror board game section.
Yeah, it is very possible there is both an RPG called Final Girl and a board game card game called Final Girl. Because if I remember correctly, the RPG was more indie produced.
Yeah,
so it might not have.
Yeah, it's just using a regular deck of cards to resolve things. And yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's talk about what game systems can work for good horror campaigns. JT, what are your thoughts here?
So for me, I would lean into Savage Worlds because they have their horror companion book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's been updated for the latest edition of Savage Worlds. Has it been?
Yes, the horror companion is, I believe they have done the fantasy companion, the horror companion, the supers companion, and the sci-fi companion for the newest version of the game.
Okay, I couldn't remember because I ran the horror companion in Deadlands using the not most recent, but the one older, because the most recent wasn't out yet.
Right.
But yeah, and it worked very well. It worked very well. The supporting material in the horror companion was a good education on how to set up, present, run a horror-themed game. And Deadlands obviously just is a natural fit for, because it's weird Western with dark, weird Western stuff going on, right? And you can have lighthearted Deadlands as well. It could swing both ways, but the natural inclination for running in the Deadlands setting is not Scooby-Doo type
Yeah,
horror.
I think with Savage Worlds actually has several different settings that work well in that horror genre. Speaking of Scooby-Doo, there is East Texas University, which is my favorite, which is basically the PCs are students attending a haunted college and dealing with all of those mysteries. So it's very much Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Scooby-Doo, teenagers, young adults running around solving mysteries and dealing with ghosts and monsters and vampires and all of this. There's also, I believe it's called Rippers, and I'm not sure if this one is updated for the newest version of Savage Worlds, but that one is basically Victorian monster hunting. I think one of the things to point out with Savage Worlds is that it is going to lean a little more towards some action in the games. So you need to, like, if you want to run something that's a bit, I don't want to say lethal, but a little more cerebral, a little more like everyone needs to be super careful and cautious about what they're doing, it's not necessarily the best thing, because Savage Worlds is meant to be a little bit more action oriented. Jared, what systems do you recommend for a horror campaign?
A lot of games, as long as they are not specifically pushing completely against a horror theme, I think can be used for a horror theme. I was just thinking it wasn't that the entire campaign was this, but actually a lot of it was. But it specifically popped into my head that in my 7C game, we had a session where they are in Castile over what would have been in the real world, All Hallows Eve and everything. Given 7C is sort of Europe during that time period, except not, kind of turning that sideways and running a ghost story in the mansion that they were staying in over that time period. So I think you really can do that in just about any system that is not pushing super hard back against trying to run it as a horror system.
One of my players jokes that every game is a Cthulhu game. You just need to get there. And I don't fully agree with him, but I also don't necessarily completely disagree with him. I would also suggest people look at some of the Free League games, specifically Vaesen, which, again, like I mentioned earlier, is mysteries involving the supernatural that the player characters are solving, and some of it can get pretty horrific. Be careful if you do any adventure involving a Myling. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You can look it up. Just be careful of Mylings, because those are some touchy topics. Also, while it's not a game I generally seek out, I'm given to understand Aliens is actually fairly solid as far as a campaign goes, which made me confused because doesn't like most everyone die by the end of it? And like, no, they have stuff in the game to account for characters, continuing on or changing characters or the like, depending upon what the storyline of the campaign is.
So, like the colonist book for Aliens, one of the things that that does is it kind of introduces survival horror into this, because there's a lot of times they will sell people on going to these colonies and starting them up, and then the corporations do not support them. And then suddenly you're having to survive on this planet with no food, or you're trapped out in the wilderness, when, it's cold and you have no resources for this. So it kind of introduces some of those other, like, we're isolated out here in space, completely by ourselves, we could die at any minute type of situations that aren't just a xenomorph jumping out of somebody's chest.
And I suppose, also speaking of survival horror and Free League, we should also mention that they have the Walking Dead game, which is like, I mean, that's survival horror and it's most publicly well known.
It's interesting because there is a lot of like domain management in that game that you may not think, but makes sense when you think about it. Because you get to a certain point where you're establishing the area and what resources you have and what's pushing back against your resources. So there's some interesting things going on there other than just the zombies trying to eat your face.
And I suppose any topic talking about horror-themed campaigns would be remiss in not mentioning Call of Cthulhu and all of its variations. Again, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but it is a venerable game from way back when and is pretty well supported in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, though, because most of the time I have engaged with Call of Cthulhu, it has been one-shots at conventions.
I got to admit, I've never actually played it. I've played adjacent to it, meaning like the Arkham Horror board game. I have it and every flippin' expansion for it, to the point I had to make two custom carrying cases to carry everything in. I've played, was it Elder Sign, which is the simpler dice version?
Yep.
Played a little bit of the Arkham Horror card game, didn't really grab me, so I moved on from that. But I've never played the actual role-playing game before.
I've played it mostly as one-shots, and that's usually out of respect to the people I like who want to run it, but they know I won't play a long campaign of it. But I do know that campaigns can work and go really well. There's also other adjacent games, like I think Delta Green. There was a Powered by the Apocalypse game called Tremulous, which was similarly themed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of different games kind of themed on that cosmic horror genre meant to slowly drive you mad as your characters investigate things.
Yeah, Green Ronin just not too long ago had Cthulhu Awakens, which is based on the Age system. That has moved a little bit away from saying it's strictly sanity and turning it more into alienation. Like, you are more attuned to these other dimensions and you can't function as someone living in the regular world. Like, it may come across as people thinking that you have these issues, but it's really like you're seeing all of this stuff in the cosmos and humans aren't meant to do that. So you start, you know, having problems because of that. And I kind of like that flavor of it instead of, especially, I'm just going to say this. If you're making a role-playing game and you have a chart where you're having someone roll to get a specific diagnosis that exists in the DSM-5, don't do that. That's not how they work. People don't randomly get schizophrenia. That's not how it works, and it's completely insensitive. So just don't do it.
Yep. Totally agree. Yep.
Yeah, things have changed quite a bit in the years that we have all been playing role-playing games and what's considered okay and what is like, ooh, don't do that. Don't do that. You know, it's one thing if you want to say that witnessing the things the characters have witnessed is slowly driving them insane, but like Jared said, don't roll on a table. Mental illness doesn't work that way.
No.
So what are some things that we can all suggest for someone who wants to insert a spooky session into a regular ongoing campaign? Because not everyone can drop everything to just run a spooky one-shot or a spooky campaign during the holiday when they've got an ongoing, you know, D&D game they've been running for years and they just want to drop in a game for the season. JT?
All right. I'm going to go with the typical haunted house, which, of course, I don't know if there is actually a typical haunted house, but, you know, the haunted house theme. Is there something haunting the house? Is the house the haunt itself? Or, say, like Poltergeist, is it the land that they're on that is causing the bad juju? And this can range everything from campy Scooby-Doo to the movie 13 Ghosts to like Stephen King's short story 1408, Poltergeist. The choices are endless for a haunted house, right? And really, you're going to get the most oomph from the haunted house by determining backstories and psychology of those who are either trapped inside or left behind. And when I say those who are trapped, you know, left behind or trapped inside, that doesn't necessarily mean living, breathing people. You know, it can be poltergeists, it can be ghosts, it can be any number of spirits, physical undead as well, or humans that are maybe not quite right because of the experiences they've had because of what the house has done to them. Usually, the PCs are put in a situation to remedy or at least alleviate whatever haunt is going on with the house. So that should be the goal for the session is fix the damn house, not survive the house. Of course, you got to survive the house to fix the house, but that should be your clear goal that you've presented to your PCs is to they need to somehow resolve or fix the bad stuff that's going on with the house.
Jared, your thoughts here?
Going along with these kind of like inserting a classic horror trope into an ongoing game, I am going to call this the Silent Hill treatment, because even though it's kind of the same thing Ravenloft does, it is a trope that comes up in a lot of different horror. And that is, your people are doing what they normally do. They pull up into this town. No one's heard of this town. You can't figure out how to leave this town. Creepy, horrible, terrible things happen. And basically, your objective is to, it's not just to survive usually, it's often to find out what terrible thing happened in this town that caused it to be haunted in this way, to where it's kind of out of sync with the rest of everything around it. And I think that makes a good, you know, one or two shot game there, where that feeling that we can't leave this place and we have to find out what's going on and bad stuff is just going to keep happening until we figure it out. I think that's a good one to kind of drop in there, and you can do it in varying degrees of this is magic or supernatural or even sci-fi version of it.
Yeah, I think the trick is you want to lean into the tone of a horror game, regardless of what, I mean, like, if you're playing a super goofy campaign, then this, you know, okay, take some lessons from Scooby-Doo. But you want to lean into the tone of a horror game, which is this tension and mystery of what is happening, what is going on. And you can do a whole lot with this, whether it's, you know, depending upon the type of game you're running, introducing a monster or enemy that seems like it's some sort of horror monster. Vampires and werewolves, they are always thematic for Halloween season. So you can always drop them in whatever game you're running. Any last words that anyone has on the topic of horror gaming?
Since you brought up radically shifting tones, I did just want to say, this isn't necessarily an RPG thing, but if you have the opportunity to watch the Supernatural episode that crosses over with Scooby-Doo, you absolutely should watch that episode. Even if you stopped watching Supernatural after the first 5 seasons, even if you've never watched Supernatural, you should watch that episode because it is hilarious. And it is very much a clash of two similar, stories that play out much differently smashed together.
Yeah, it's like they have similar themes, but very different tones. JT, any last thoughts from you?
Yeah, safety tools.
Yeah.
Normal games need them. Horror games need them even more, because you're going to be hitting on topics that could be hypersensitive, not just sensitive. Really, the two go-tos for a horror-themed session and or game would be Lines and Veils and the X card, because when we're doing Lines and Veils, you don't always remember everything that'll trigger you, and that's what the X card there is for, is a safety net, just in case somebody or the game master, whoever, stumbles across something that you're like, ooh, let's not do that. Fade to Black is good as well. Having like a black square on the table to say, okay, I don't mind the theme, but we're getting too detailed. Let's fade to black on this particular scene and move on. If you don't know what any of that means, I'm not going to take the time to go into it. Hit Gnome Stew, search for safety tools. Phil has a fantastic article covering all of this and more.
Yeah.
So I would just advise you to definitely implement safety tools, even if it's your normal group and you know you've known the people for 20 plus years, like my group is going. If I was going to go deep into horrific things, I would have a mid-campaign session zero specifically, or maybe a pre-session 10 minutes or 20 minutes to set up Lines and Veils, slap down an X card, fade to black, and then start having fun with scaring the crap out of each other.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to bring up as a last thought, is like, make sure that you are prepared with your safety tools when you start leaning into these horror things. Because the last thing you want to do is traumatize one of your friends because, you know, you hit some topic that you didn't realize is something they're really sensitive to or they have some issues with and all of that. Even if it's something simple as you have a friend who can't handle spiders and you didn't know it, you don't want to suddenly be running an entire horror game themed around spiders with them at the table.
Right.
Be respectful of your fellow players and yourself.
And honestly, instead of doing it before, like immediately before the spooky session, maybe do it at the end of the session before the spooky session, so you don't accidentally prep something that somebody's going to line or veil.
Yeah. So I think we should get out of here. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon back by following the Patreon link of the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. So if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Dico with Advantage. Ange and Jared love talking about RPGs and D&D. Together, they share insights into the games they're running in the campaign journal and then tackle a variety of topics that affect the game in the DM's workshop. Maybe you'll even pick up an ancient D&D factoid about a previous edition of the game that you'll never use. By the way, I've used some of them.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
I know we always talk about not using crowdfunding things because we don't know when things are going to drop, but I am fairly certain this is going to show up before Halloween. I'm bringing up The Between, which is an RPG that is on BackerKit right now. This has been out before. It uses the same system as Brindlewood Bay, but it is like Victorian supernatural investigations, which is near and dear to my heart. I love that. They are not so much doing a new edition of the game, but they are giving it like a full hardcover treatment. They're doing like a couple expansion books. The books look gorgeous if you actually look at them on the site. But I've read the original version of the game, and I love it. It's great. I think if you have the opportunity, you should swing by BackerKit and see if it is something you would be interested in.
Awesome. JT.
All right, I've got two. One is on theme, and one is a recent game that I've played. So my on theme is a little self-serving because I have a short story out in the world that was part of an anthology. I've since got the rights back, re-released it under my own imprint, and it's a direct sell off my website. But you can get it in print and ebook format, and the story is called The Carnival's Children, and it's set a few months after Halloween, where the world goes to hell because of infected makeup imported from overseas that turned clowns, news reporters, little kids wearing, you know, face makeup and all that for Halloween into zombies. Yes, we have zombies and clowns. I don't know if the zombies are clowns or if the clowns are the zombies, but we have zombie clowns. So if that's your thing, check it out. Link will be in the show notes. Or if you're driving and can't click, remember jtevans.net and click on signed books. You'll find it in the list and you can go from there. But it's The Carnival's Children. And it's very adult. So don't like leave the copy laying on your coffee table for the little ones to get a hold of. You've been warned. And then the other thing I want to give a shout out to is a board game called Veiled Fate. It's from Studio 4. It was a Kickstarter thing years ago. He got his copy in. We played it. It was a hoot. The gist of the game is to screw your neighbor. It's a screw your neighbor mechanic type game. However, everybody doesn't know which neighbor they're screwing when they do the screwing over, because the identities of which player is playing which demigod is secret. And you really want to play subtly so that you don't give away the fact that you're the blue demigod or the purple demigod or the red demigod or whatever, right? So you're trying to maneuver your way to get the most renown without really tipping your hand. So it's a lot of fun, and you can move any piece. You can move your own piece. You can move other people's pieces. There's quests. There's three acts that you go through, so like a three-act play kind of thing. It was a whole hell of a lot of fun. It does take a couple hours to play the game, but we had a blast with it. Again, Veiled Fate is the name of the game, and there will be a link to that in the show notes.
Sounds good. The thing I'm just going to give a shout out to is anybody playing their games on the Shard VTT. They are currently having a Halloween sale with a whole bunch of D&D themed games that lean into horror, including the Empire of Ghouls from Kobold Press, which I considered as what I might be running for my players soon and then decided to do something else. But either way, it's worth looking at if you are using Shard. So, do you think you have all been good enough to avoid the stew pot this week?
Maybe.
I think there are some tentacles in it. I'm not sure.